Welcome to Season 2 of The Reb Chat, the podcast that celebrates the power of human creativity in a world that's rapidly going digital. Join us, Becky and Kathy Dixon, co-founders of RebCat Creations, as we dive into the exciting world of audio drama production. And we'll be joined from time to time by guest speakers from the storytelling world. We'll explore the creative process of audio drama production, from writing scripts, to character development, to sound design, and everything in between. We'll talk about the technical aspects of recording and editing audio, and we'll take a look at the business side of running a production company. And we'll also explore the ways in which technology is changing and disrupting the industry and creating new opportunities and challenges. So whether you're a seasoned audio drama enthusiast or a storytelling newbie, there's something for you on the Reb Chat. So welcome to the Reb Chat Series 2. And today we are going to be reviewing the book Spare. A few facts about Spare, which is an autobiography, a memoir, authorised by Prince Harry. He did have a ghostwriter involved. And it was published by Random Penguin House in January 2023. And we believe it was recorded during the pandemic. The first week of sales were, according to the internet, 3.2 million global sales, of which 1.6 million were in the US alone. So pretty much a publishing phenomena. This has been published in hardback form, digital and audio. And in the audio audible version, Harry himself, Prince Harry, recorded. It was a collaboration with J.R. Moringa. So those are some of the facts about the book. An interesting observation is that we can't find how many copies are sold. So my name is Kathy Dixon, and I will be talking to my sister, Rebecca Dixon, who has read the hard copy of Spare, brought over by our brother during a recent visit, from cover to cover. And I'm very grateful she's done that, because she has some insights that she would like to share with us. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Kathy.
I really like to dig into, you know, why you wanted to read this, because you did specifically want to read this. And something you said before, we noticed in the researching the sales of the book, there were stories of now it's half price and it's being left in European holiday resorts. People are not picking it up. You had a couple of observations about that.
I did, because this book is, it's very hefty. It's very clunky. Today we're very used to either reading on our Kindle, listening to Audible, or reading, you know, a pocket sized book. It is a very thick 400 page hardback book, which I took it when I actually read the book in the mountains in a home that one of our sisters has in the mountains. And it was a bit annoying to get into the bag. So I may have left it there too after I'd read it. I've worked in hotels. A lot of people leave books in hotels. I don't really think that is a valid criticism against the book Spare, but it's been left around. And also, it's a big magazine. It's not Lord of the Rings, is it? Mm. So people leave magazines everywhere. And that's not to take anything away from Spare, but I do see it as a glorified magazine in some ways, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a very interesting observation, Becky, that people do leave books in resorts. In fact, if you go to some homes, you see people leave your book and pick up the next one. So perhaps somebody was going to pick it up.
And also, Kathy, do we know how true that information is? And I don't want to be sceptical or think there's a conspiracy going on, but, it, you know, there were no real facts there. It's just hotels have been said. Which hotel?
Well, so, anybody listening to this, if you do have facts on how many up to date, this is July that we're recording this, July the 22nd. So if you have information on the recent and most up to date sales of this book, be very interested to hear that. Why did you read it, Becky?
Motivation. That's a very good question, because it's really, why did anybody read the book? I am not and have never been interested in the royal family. I neither hate them nor love them. I'm just not interested. I know very little about them. I do know things that people tell me. And this year, a lot of people were, the coronation was going on. It's in your feed. It's in my feed too. And I was watching the coronation on a rainy day, and I was watching, above all, I was watching Harry's interview with Tom Brady. I think he's a good friend of Harry. As I said again, I don't really know much about all this. And they were talking about the book, and I thought, you know what? Everybody's talking about this book, but until I make any more criticisms or talk about this book, I need to read it. And that's why I chose to read it. To be honest, I looked it up in the internet and I thought, oh, bloody hell. Excuse me. Yeah, I have to edit that part. It was €37 to buy it on the internet. And I knew my brother was coming over to Italy because I live in Italy. And I said, Pete, if you come over, could you bring me a copy of Spare? It might be a little bit cheaper in the UK, because €37 is quite expensive for a book, I think, at the end of the day. So that's really why I read it. I thought I should get informed properly before I made any criticisms.
You might have partially answered this, but we all have opinions and even assumptions. Did you have any?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Something that I've learned through reading this book, I think, is that I had a lot of, I was very biased already before I read this book. I was very biased about what I thought about Harry, what I thought about Meghan, what I thought I knew about the royal family. So even whilst reading the book, I realised that I was already reading it with bias. And it was only really after I put the book aside a little while, and we actually postponed this interview, didn't we? We were supposed to do it 2 or 3 weeks ago, if I remember. And I think this would be a very different interview if I had spoken 3 weeks ago. Because as I reflected on the book, and reflection, I think, is always essential to, before you speak, you reflect. And I processed it much more after I read it. And I tried to strip away the bias that I had while reading it. I don't think I was skeptical. I was biased. So that was absolutely a very, I think, a key question that you asked me, that yes, I was biased and it affected how I read the book.
So after that reflection, what did you come up with?
I came up with the fact that this person, Harry, wants to tell his story. He feels that he has been wronged. He's angry about many things. He has various relationships that haven't been working. And I think it's anger that comes from him. I think we've talked about this also before. There's a certain arrogance that comes through Harry, because Harry probably isn't aware that he is incredibly privileged as a human being. I would also like to say that although he's incredibly privileged, maybe being part of the royal family is also a kind of prison too. So although he's very privileged by his education, by his financial security, I understand better now after reading the book that they do live in a kind of zoo. And we are the zookeepers, maybe the press are the zookeepers, and we're the people who go and entertain ourselves at the zoo. So that were my, those are my reflections, and these are things I've never really thought about before reading this book. That's just a reflection I think I can make.
What is the book about, Becky, if you could summarise it?
I would say the book is about his journey from probably when his mother died. It's a story, his story about his relationships with his family, each single member of that family, his relationship with Britain, his, how he's felt as being a member of the royal family, what's that been like for him, and how, as a member of the royal family, what are his responsibilities? Yeah, I think it's his relationships and his journey up to now. And then, in addition, his relationship to the press.
So his story and his version of events.
Yeah.
And as you say, the relationship with many people, not only his own family, but also with the British public. So that's what's making it fascinating. And one thing is for sure, there's so much being written. There's in a whole industry around the royal family. We know that. and with social media, you know, the amount of pundits and commentary, including ours, I guess, about this family, it's interesting how fascinating it is. And I wonder, is that so much part of our core identity? Because we are British and they represent us in some way, whether, and it seems that we've chosen them to represent us. Do you think there's something about his need to give his version of events?
I do. I was watching an interview. As I said, I've got rather pulled into this story now. And he said something that I thought was relevant. I've written this book. At least these are my words. I've said them and I will endorse them. These are the words that I've said. So this is Harry's story. And now that Harry's made it public, we do have a right to talk about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that we create stories, Becky, on Rebcat Creations, but once they've been published, it's the listener who is, it's their property. Their opinions are their property. And even if our intention was not, has it's been interpreted, then it is the property of the reader, the listener, whether in hardback or digital. And I wonder if he really appreciates that. I mean, I don't know him, so I just wonder, does he appreciate that some of the backlash, which must be very hurtful, is because of that contract between a publisher or a writer and the readership?
Exactly. It's a very, very valid point. And when you talk in your mind to yourself, that is a conversation you have with yourself. When you actually put the words out loud, people will respond, and they won't always respond in the way that you predicted. And the way you say things, people will choose to either believe them or not to believe them, or interpret them in a very different way to how you thought they would interpret them. And I think he underestimated the consequences of this. There's always a consequence in everything, and the consequences of him writing this book during lockdown, when we were not all really in the right state of mind. I think that's also quite poignant, that it was written during lockdown, and it was written impulsively, immediately after when he left his family.
Do you think he would have benefited waiting a few years before writing this?
I do. I think this should have been the rough draft.
Okay, really interesting.
Absolutely. Because it's very, I mean, it's 400 pages, Kathy. And it needed somewhat editing. I wonder, did everybody get from the beginning to the end? I read the first half, and to be honest, I don't know if I'd read the rest. And I did read it because you said, oh, yeah, you're reading that book. And I was thinking, oh, now I've got to finish it. So this book, I made myself finish it. Because I thought I have to get to the end, because I chose to read it, as I said in the beginning, for different reasons. It wasn't, oh, that looks like a good book, I'll read that. This was a book that I read to get informed.
So from your view, there was an obligation to finish it. It wasn't coming from the engagement in the story.
Not at all.
And we know that that's pretty important when you're telling a story.
And I believe that the second part of the book actually is much more engaging than the first part. So I'm glad I got to the end, because if I hadn't got to the end, I don't think I'd be talking about the book in the same light as if I just read snippets of the book. And I think that's what's happened, that everybody has been listening to snippets of the book through various people's, through Piers Morgan, through, are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's through the lens of the media, whose job it is to make stories up and keep our ears and our eyeballs on content. So it's been a gift that keeps on giving for so many of those media pundits, because it's just so bottomless about what can be said and speculated. And there's also that link back to identity, his identity, but perhaps the British public's identity with itself. Who are we now? Post-Brexit, a changing monarchy, a changing world. Who are we? And there was this constancy of Queen Elizabeth that has now gone. And we're in the next generation.
I like the way you put that. I think that's very well put. It's something that I had in the fog of my mind, but you've actually put it very well there. It's the identity of who we are as the British. Mm. That was excellently put. Yeah.
Thanks, Megs. And I think families are, when we come from a very large family, we're a family of 10, and we know that where you are in the family does have an impact. And as the second child of a world famous family and the role given to him that he didn't really choose as spare to the heir, to the number one, I'd imagine that has an enormous impact.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is something that we all have to respect.
Mm.
That whatever we think about Harry, as British citizens anyway, we uphold this royal family. We let them be. They are there. They exist because we allow them to be there. And so we have also decided that Harry is the spare. At the end of the day, you know, we're complicit. We're accomplices in this story. And we're saying, you know, Harry, you're the spare. You know, wow, you're so lucky. You're so privileged. What's your problem? Why are you whinging all the time? That's a word I've heard quite a lot from people who are connected to the royal family, being paid by the royal family, by the way. And their whole life depends on the Holy Family. And they generally say he whinges. He's spoiled. He's overprivileged. He's elite. But at the end of the day, he was born into the world like you and I. And he was told, you're the spare.
So there's the rebel in Harry, isn't there? He stepped over those boundaries. He is going to let his voice be heard. It's the breaking of that maybe contract, which is the Queen used to say. What would she used to say, Becky? Is it not keep calm and carry on? But
there's never complain and what is it?
Never complain and never explain, something exactly. Like that. So she played the long game and Harry's decided not to. He's released this. Do you get the impression that he's telling the truth in this book, Becky?
That's a hard one, isn't it? Is he telling the truth? Because it's a hard one.
It's our opinion, isn't it?
In the book, often he says sometimes, and I say he does because we do know, I think we know that it's been written, as you said, it's been written by a ghostwriter. Often it says, I don't recall. Maybe I said that. So that is often a line that comes up when there's been a conversation or events, and he'll say, I don't really recall. So that's a little bit of get out clause, isn't it? A get out line. I don't really recall.
Well, the truth is our memories are pretty inaccurate. And we see things, you know, all of our past, we see through the lens of our own experiences and our own biases. It's something you mentioned at the beginning of this. So are they accurate? It's another conversation. You read a lot, Becky, and you love novels and you love stories.
Hmm.
So did you like this book? Well, I might mention that. Yeah.
No, you didn't actually. We haven't actually answered this as did I like it? Did I enjoy it? The reading value for me? Not really. No, I'll be very honest. But that doesn't mean it's not a good book. Mm. It doesn't mean somebody else wouldn't enjoy it. But me personally, I didn't enjoy it. No, I found it quite a struggle to turn the pages at times, to be honest.
I wanted to ask you, was it the way the book was written that you didn't like or was it the content?
I would say it's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
About his mother when he talks about Frogmore, and it goes into this very, very flowery poetic narrative, and it gets in the way of the autobiography because it's, are you writing a film now? Is this a film setting or are you telling your story? It makes it unrealistic. I think also, that's what I wanted to say, that the reader also reads between the lines.
Mm.
He talks a lot about his brother and his in various chapters. What the reader will do is say, well, how will William feel when he's just said that?
Mm.
That's a very, very instinctive thing that the reader does, because when you read a book, when you read a novel and it's become almost like a novel, there's the villain, the hero, and we instinctively fall in love with the hero or the person who's the underdog.
Mm.
And William hasn't been given a voice, but he's basically, there's not very many kind words about William in this story.
Do you think he's been cast as the anti-hero then?
In the book, I would say so. From my reading, I don't think he's given he's not spoken terribly kindly about Willie. And every time he has spoken about Willie, as he calls him, Willie, Harry always comes up top trump. Harry's empathetic. Harry's compassionate. Harry's the person who's just said, okay, I'll do that for Willie. I'm so used to being the underdog myself. So that's when the whinging, I suppose, comes in. And that's when he blows his own trumpet, as we would say.
Mm.
And people don't like that when they read. They don't like somebody bragging about themselves. It's for people to judge, isn't it? Your behaviour, not for you to talk about your wonderful behaviour.
I think writing a memoir is an incredible challenge, whether you're telling your story or writing the story. And it's interesting the role you cast for yourself in this storytelling, and the role you cast for other people. What role do you think he cast for his mother? Because she's mentioned quite a lot in the book. And we are about the same age as Diana. So we've known her most of our lives.
His mother is the absolute heroine. Mm. She is the divine goddess for him. He becomes fantastical. He describes her as somebody untouchable, indescribable. He compares her to a star. Now, his relationship is with his mother is his own personal prerogative. But he's told the world now who she is and what she was. It's his opinion. And to be honest, and to be fair to Diana, she was not a perfect human being.
Mm.
And he's made her into a perfection. She was a perfect human being, a goddess. And right in the very first chapter of the book, he writes pages that just describe Diana.
Wow.
And this is a person he knew until he was 12. So he's, maybe that's the other thing. If we all think about our parents before we were 12, we have a very different opinion of them now as adults. Right? Mm. So let's also give him a bit of room here for that, the memory of her, because that is his memory as a child.
So he talks about his brother. Mm-hmm. He talks about his mother. What does he say about his father?
His father's an interesting one. It's very clear that he actually loves his father. What comes through from the reading is that his father was very loving to him. But yet again, he criticizes him. And he tells us about episodes that happened, which are very unflattering for his father. For his own son to slightly insinuate that his father is a bit of an old fogey.
Mm.
This is the reader reading it, what I interpreted. I'm not saying that he said that, but as a reader, my understanding was that, you know, Dad's a bit old, a bit senile. Hasn't got the energy of a young man, is a very eccentric person, which we know he is. So he was rather unflattering in parts about his father. And to my mind, I think his father has played a significant role in his life. And there is a very loving relationship.
Mm.
Because he gives his father the least slack. To be honest.
Who else appears in this story? So you've got Diana, you've got obviously his brother, you've got his father.
Who else? Kathy, you've got Granny.
Oh. Huey too.
Exactly. And with Granny, he's very careful.
Mm.
He's very careful. He mentions her very little, but Granny is Granny. And he's being very careful. Maybe the ghostwriter helped him with that. We have two or three things about Granny and not much else. And she's always Granny. So we don't learn a lot about Granny through Spare, to be honest.
Maybe just as well. Mm. And anybody else that is worth mentioning?
I think the other people worth mentioning would be the press.
Okay. And that's interesting because we know that he's declared war on the press as his life mission. There's a number of court cases outstanding now, talking about press intrusion. And I can only imagine that must be the most horrific thing. Everything you say, everything you don't say, stories being made up about you, click, click, click everywhere you turn. It's such an a terrible invasion of you as a human being. So did you get away thinking, I think it's valid, it's not valid? What was your impressions about his musings on the press?
I think it was very valid, actually, from what you just said, actually, is that put yourself in his shoes.
Mm.
How would you like that constantly to have the paparazzi around you? And in addition to that, reading things, this is what he says, so this is his truth, that are untrue about you in the newspapers. Headlines about you, headlines calling you a sicko, headlines saying that you cheated, headlines about you and Meghan, headlines about you and your mother. Who decides? I don't really know, to be honest, because as I said before, I'm not so interested in this. But you probably know better than that on that, Kathy. But it would be, I think, very wearying. And this is his big problem. When we listen to his interviews, his main issue is with the press. Where they have documented his life and his family's life. To be honest too, Kathy, I don't know what you think. I think it's a little bit shameful also. Do we really need to do that? Is that really important to us? Do we really need to hear these, do we really need all that, really?
Well, to remain relevant, they say, the worst thing is not to be spoken about. Okay, to remain relevant, whether that's in good or bad terms, it's keeping the story going. And the press in some way does serve to keep the story going.
That's also true, you see. So it's a bit like the chicken and the egg here, isn't it? We go round and round in circles. And the royal family, as we said before, they are, in today's world anyway, they are very much at our service. But the royal family today are there because, I think I said this before, didn't I? Without a doubt, if the British people didn't want the royal family, they would not be there.
I wonder if there was a big census, or if they would stay. I wonder how they would vote. Exactly. Interestingly, is the impact of this book has been pretty enormous. It's a publishing phenomenon. It's a lens into a man's, I think, struggle and pain about who he is. His need to have his own voice, his side of the story, it tells all of that, but it's had an impact. From you reading it, because I haven't, have you any more kind of observations of what you think the impact on you maybe of reading this, and maybe the wider impact?
Yeah, impact, that's a good starter here. The impact is the fact that even I have read this book. Not a kind of book I'd pick up. The impact will... I'm not answering your question, but if we read this book in 30 years' time, if our children read this book, our children's children at this stage... How would they read it? How would they read the book? How would it come off in 30 years' time? We read books about royals 200, 300 years ago, and they're great stories. We love them. Great films. Maybe in 50 years' time, this will be a very different book.
Yeah. So
maybe came out too early, too.
We did say that, didn't we, earlier on? Exactly. Maybe it was timing here.
But there are two sides to every story, without a doubt. And it is true, whether we haven't mentioned the M word yet, probably on purpose.
Well, it wasn't her story, was it?
No, it wasn't her story. And the M, she can talk for herself. She gets enough, airplay, as it were. He feels that she got a lot of nasty, nasty press. And that is absolutely true too. I mean, there were a lot of nasty things said about Meghan. Maybe she wanted that too, because like you said, news is news.
And also, if we go into the domain of storytelling, you have a protagonist, you have an anti-hero or the enemy. You have all sorts of archetypes, that is what they are, who show up. They all play their part. And her to be cast as the baddie means that somebody else is the goodie. And that seems to be a fairy story.
Exactly.
As well, the need to have a bad person.
She's like the fairy that turned up, and you know, in
yeah,
and she cast the wicked spell, isn't she? She's the she's the bad fairy. Through this, William and Kate have become they've become the perfect couple. Everything they do is perfect. Everything they say, even when they blunder, it's sweet, it's cute, it's modern. Mm. When Meghan blunders, she's a bitch.
Mm.
She's a fake. So, like you said, it's all storytelling, and who really knows?
And something you mentioned at the beginning, without reflection, even on your own lenses of how you interpret, I mean, there's facts and there's feelings and there's opinions. You might get caught up in a media storm whose only intention is to keep our eyes and our earballs where they want us to be. And I wonder if that's, we're all colluding with this. Let's just be involved in these stories. And there's so many other things in the world that really require our attention.
That's the danger, isn't it? That's the danger.
So Becky, just in summary, would you recommend other people read this book?
Yeah. If you're interested in the royal family, if you watch interviews, if you keep up with all the gossip, absolutely read the book. Otherwise, don't talk about it. You know, you talk about something you know, but don't be misinformed.
Becky, thank you so much. One for reading the book, one for preparing this, for bringing in a lot of really valuable insights into not just a story, but what it means. And I found it really fascinating. So thank you.
Thank you.
And to the listeners, thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to The Reb Chat. We're here to share the love of creativity and a good story. So if you've been enjoying what we've been podcasting, please do like or subscribe, or both, on Spotify, and if you're feeling very generous, buy us a coffee. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms, or head over to our Linktree page, that's RebCatC, for all the details. And if you've got a suggestion for someone we should be chatting with, please send us an email on showtime@rebcatcreations.com, and we'll do our very best to make that happen. By the way, the show notes are below, so you can find further details of what we've got going on. So, thanks for tuning in. Stay creative and keep well.